you've got to ask yourself one question.
Yes.
Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, Dirty Harry Ethics, Part 1. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hiya. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and welcome to our second two-parter. So we did, what was it, mass murder prevention?
It was mass murder prevention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cliffhanger alert, we're going to break down our episode on Dirty Harry Ethics into two parts. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching Star Trek in the 90s on TV, and whenever it was a two-parter, you knew it was a big event. So so get ready.
Yes.
All right. So, Tymie, today we're going to talk about Dirty Harry Ethics. And you've got to ask yourself one question.
Yes.
Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, this is the year of the dragon. It's supposed to be a lucky year, but I've not won a lot of money yet on the Virginia lottery. So if that happens, then I'll feel lucky.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about the scene later, but that's probably the most iconic line from Dirty Harry. So you, like the punk, got lucky because Dirty Harry's revolver actually was empty.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But anyway, before we get there, before we get to Dirty Harry, let's talk a little bit about the ethics part.
Yes.
So let's go to the neighborhood of make-believe and talk about the trolley dilemma.
Okay.
And I said neighborhood of make-believe because you remember Mr. Rogers, whenever they would go to the neighborhood, it was the trolley that took them. And I used to
Didn't have a little toot-toot whistle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like a little remote control trolley that he would run like behind him back and forth.
But there were no cats on that track.
Not on the track, no, but there was in the neighborhood of
make-believe. That's right.
Because I used to watch Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers twice a day. It came on PBS twice a day when I was a kid.
Twice a day. Mm-hmm. Aw, that's cute.
And I love both of them. And the first cat that we had, it was an outside cat. I got to name it. Mom let me name it, and I named it Henrietta Pussycat from Mr. Rogers.
That's very sweet.
And she was a little gray and white cat, looked just like
that's funny just since like you Henrietta. Hate cats now. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, it was an outside cat, so, you know, she stayed outside.
Okay. So explain the trolley problem.
Yeah, so anyway, the trolley dilemma. So imagine that you are in a control booth and an out-of-control train is hurtling down the tracks.
Okay.
And there are five workers who are kind of toiling away unaware on the tracks.
Yes.
So you're standing in the control booth and you can switch the train to a different track. And on the different track, there's only one person who's working away.
Yes.
So the question is, what would you do? Would you switch flip the switch and let the train run over one person or do nothing and let the train run over five people?
Well, I was closing my eyes, listeners. You can't see this, but I was wanting to visualize me being in the control booth because you're basically asking me like what I would do in this completely unrealistic scenario. Probably flip the switch and yell at Bob, the one guy, to get off the track. Mm-hmm. So I know from past personal experience, that's the way I tend to react in emergency scenarios is just like react first and don't think about it. So I think my in my brain would think flip the switch, scream. Mm-hmm. Like those would be the two things that I would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you would pick that choice because.
Yes. Well, to do nothing is a choice. Right?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I mean, to do nothing is a choice. I mean, we teach this in bystander intervention. And so I would want to intervene because I would feel guilty if I didn't intervene. But I'm just trying to think about how I would respond in this very unrealistic scenario.
Yeah. But I mean, all of these kind of like classical philosophy dilemmas are not very realistic.
No.
And this is one of the fun parts about teaching in ethics classes. We get to talk about these. And my favorite one that I've ever encountered is like the pregnant lady in the cave. And it's kind of similar to this.
Yeah.
But the idea is like you're on like the seaside cave tour and there's a like a pregnant lady in your tour and you're leaving the cave.
Okay, yeah.
And the pregnant lady gets like stuck in the mouth of the cave.
Ew.
And the tide starts rising.
Yeah.
And your tour guide just happens to have a stick of dynamite.
What?
Yeah. So the dilemma was, do you like use the dynamite to blow the pregnant lady out of the mouth of the cave, or let the whole tour group drown in the cave.
Oh, well, that's awful. I don't know who came up with that one.
I know, but so both of those scenarios encourage the use of utilitarian ethics.
Yes. Yes.
Which, even if you're not an ethicist or a philosopher, you're probably familiar with the fact that utilitarianism is about the greatest good for the greatest number of people.
Yes.
Or as Mr. Spock would say, and I'm holding up my Vulcan salute right now, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Yeah, so, that scene was very sad when he was dying,
mm-hmm.
you know, because then, you know, Kirk was trying to save him, and then he was like...
Star Trek II, yeah. Wrath of Khan. Jim, you always have been... my friend.
He was dying of what? Radiation poisoning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he saved the...
That's right.
Again, he saved the whole ship. Like, he sacrificed himself to save the ship. Died of radiation poisoning. But,
okay,
of course,
anyway.
Spoiler alert, resurrected in the very next film.
Star Trek III,
The Search for Spock.
Yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anyway, utilitarian ethics, the greatest good for the greatest number of people, is a consequentialist ethic, which means that... when we're trying to determine right or wrong, we think about the consequences of our actions.
Right.
And not to go into full detail here, but as opposed to like a deontological perspective that says that we determine right and wrong by our duty or like our intention or motivation.
Yeah.
But utilitarianism is only one form of consequentialism. But, you know, essentially the argument is that the best consequences, the most ethical consequences, are the ones that maximize pleasure, maximize benefit, and minimize pain or consequences.
Right.
So essentially, if you've ever done a pros and cons list, you've done utilitarian ethics, essentially.
Yes, great. Mm-hmm. What does this have to do with Dirty Harry, though?
Well, one of the biggest criticism of utilitarian ethics is that it would endorse, quote unquote, the ends justify the means thinking or ethics. And that's the idea that if like an outcome or a consequence or a goal is important enough, any method of achieving that consequence is acceptable.
Right.
So, you know, from this perspective, it's acceptable, it's ethical, it's morally righteous to do something that would otherwise be considered bad or evil as long as it leads to a greater good.
Yeah.
And this can make good, you know, like fictional moral dilemmas, let the train run over one person or blow the pregnant lady out of the cave. And it also makes good, like, great television.
Yeah.
So remember years ago we used to have, like, Walking Dead nights and we'd get together and watch Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, like, the moral dilemmas in that show are kind of based on this idea of, like, the greater good. What would you do or what would you be willing to do in a post-apocalyptic world to survive or to protect someone you love?
We already decided I would eat people. No problem. I would have no problem eating human meat.
Yeah. Do you eat someone or do you even greater than that? Like, do you kill someone
to eat them?
To eat them. Like not someone already.
If I'm hungry enough, I already know that's going to happen. So.
Yeah. But I mean, even like we kind of jumped to like the most extreme example there, but like, you know, steal food from innocent people to like feed yourself or
all
feed
of this
your
is involving food. And I already know that when I'm hungry, I will do whatever to get some, you know, to eat. Mm-hmm. I just will. I already know. Because, you know, the frontal lobe, and just like no higher order executive functioning is happening when I'm hungry. Like hangry, that word was meant for me. I feel like I'm sure there are other people who get angry when they're hungry, but maybe not to the extent that I get.
Yeah,
angry.
It's like 30 minutes past dinner time and you've got a person down the street like munching away on their arm.
Yes. Or I'm starting to look at the person down the street like tasty,
mouth watering. Yeah,
oh my
we don't
gosh,
even need
so
a zombie apocalypse.
Here. We do not.
Yeah. The point is it makes good television and good moral dilemmas, but in reality, it can be problematic because there are lots of evil things that happen that we justify based on the greater good. So we use the greater good to justify things that would ordinarily be considered terrible. So, you know, if you just ask someone, like, is dropping a nuclear bomb, we just talked about nuclear disasters last time, but is dropping a nuclear bomb on a civilian population center good or bad? Most people would say that's evil.
Yes.
And the only reason it would be good is for like a greater good, to prevent, to win a war, to prevent, you know, casualties from a land invasion, or torture. Is torture good or bad? Well, it's good if, you know, we're trying to fight terrorism or we're trying to, you know, like stop the ticking bomb.
Yeah. So I think I'm starting to see where you're going with Dirty Harry.
Yeah, have you seen the movie?
Yeah, I believe a long time ago. It came out in like 71, right? Mm-hmm. So I probably saw it. I think I probably saw it sometime in the 1980s. And that said, I remembered next to nothing about it. So,
oh, really?
Other than just like big general details, nothing specific. Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually seen the whole movie. I've tried to recently, but it's not available fully for like streaming.
Yeah.
On any of the streaming services, but I've watched like as many clips,
plenty
from the
of
movie
clips on
I,
there
as I can.
Yes.
So, give us a synopsis of what you remember from the film, and then you can use like Wikipedia or whatever to fill in the blanks.
This is Dirty. Okay, so Dirty Harry is about Detective Harry Callahan, who's a detective in San Francisco.
Right. And Clint Eastwood, of course, plays Dirty
Clint
Harry.
Eastwood,
Prior to this film, he'd been known really for his role in Westerns, especially as kind of like the spaghetti Westerns, the man with no name.
Yes.
And as an aside, a lot of the vigilante films were inspired by kind of like the lone gunslinger in the Western, the Old West. So there's some parallels there between like pop culture vigilante films, of which we'll debate whether Dirty Harry is one of them or not in the Western.
Yes.
And also San Francisco is not an accidental choice. For the setting, particularly in the 60s, and even now, San Francisco kind of represented this idea of like liberal permissiveness and hippies and excess. And
which is funny because right now, I finished writing about it, the San Francisco Vigilance Committee, which is one of the most famous vigilance committees of the 19th century. Mm-hmm. So they have this like history of vigilantism like embedded into the culture of San Francisco, and yet they also in the 60s came to represent this permissiveness. Okay, so he's called Dirty Harry in the movie because he gets every dirty job done, which I did not remember that at all.
Right. And so this comes from a scene where like Harry and his partner are trying to stop a guy jump off a building and die by suicide. And so basically like Dirty Harry runs up and just punches the crap out of him, beats the crap out of him.
Yeah.
And like saves him from, you know, jumping off the building.
I'm going to assault you to stop you from suicide. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, so then basically he turns to his partner. He's like, now you know why they call me Dirty Harry, because I get every dirty job done.
Okay, moving along. Mm-hmm. One of the most famous scenes, sometimes called the hot dog scene, which I just watched again, by the way.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It takes place while Harry is having lunch. A bank robbery occurs across from his lunch spot, and he, along with his trusty 357, jumps into action to shoot all of the escaping bank robbers, chewing his hot dog the entire time.
Yep.
At the end of the scene, he walks up to an injured suspect on the ground who's reaching for his shotgun, and that's when Harry gives a speech about whether there are any bullets left in his revolver, and that's the context of him asking, "Do you feel lucky, punk?"
Yeah, so it's like, you know, did I fire five shots or six shots?
Yes.
So, you know, is there a bullet left in my gun? Are you, you know, are you feeling lucky? Like, dare me to shoot you?
Yeah.
You know, and so the guy, like, he gives up. And then, of course, Clint Eastwood still points the gun at his head and pulls the trigger, and the gun is empty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the central plot of the film involves Harry tracking down Scorpio, a serial killer.
Yes, and Scorpio was played by Andrew Robinson, who plays my favorite character in Star Trek ever, Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
How many Star Trek like references can we get into this episode?
I mean, like, how many sentences do we have? Okay. I could probably find one for every single sentence. Also, he was in Hellraiser. So, Andrew Robinson. He's the guy, I don't remember the character's name, but he's the one who like gets torn apart by the hook. So he's like hanging up on the hooks, and then that's him.
That's actually based on a Viking tradition of taking the back off and like pulling the lungs out.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called like Raven, like something about, I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway,
I don't know.
That's an aside.
And also, Scorpio, played by Andrew Robinson, he has like long hair and peace symbol belt buckle. So like hippies and criminals, standing for everything that was wrong with America at the time, late 60s, early 70s.
Right. And I did read that this was based off the Zodiac also. Like that, the idea of the serial killer. But at one point, Scorpio has kidnapped a girl, and Harry tracks him down, busts into where he's staying, shoots him in the leg, and forces him to confess the location of the girl, who ends up being dead anyway.
Yeah, so like, you know, Scorpio's kidnapped this girl, and he's like living underneath this football stadium in this room, and somehow, you know, Harry finds out where he is and like busts in, and you know, like there's a chase scene, and as he's running away, like Harry shoots him in the leg, and you know, this is on like the football field in the middle of the night, and so like the, you know, the stadium lights are on, and the bad guy's like laying on the ground like screaming, and Harry runs up to him and like stomps on his bullet wound, is like grinding his foot into his bullet wound, like, where's the girl? Where's the girl?
Yeah. I didn't remember that. Mm-hmm. For sure.
I mean, when we talk about Dirty Harry ethics, that's kind of like the crux of it, like doing something bad to accomplish a good
end. So ultimately, though, Scorpio is released because Harry violated his rights.
Right.
After his release, he goes on to hijack a school bus. In the final showdown, Harry kills him and then throws his badge into the water to close the film.
Yeah, and this is like honestly hilariously over the top. So it's the idea
that
the courts are going to let a serial killer go.
Yes.
And then the person that they let go is going to go hijack a school bus full of kids.
Yes.
In like...
Yeah.
I watched this scene. It's hilarious. So, like, the school bus is going down the road, and he's on the school bus, and he's making the kids, like, sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And one of the kids, like, doesn't want to sing, and he's, like, asking him, like, where are we going? And he just, like, walks up and punches the kid, like, right in the face. Like, I mean, I can't imagine a movie doing that nowadays.
No.
But, like, basically, this guy, literally, he's, like, this, like, 10-year-old kid just, like, punches this kid right in the face and, like, start singing. So, like, this is a bad guy. Like, he's hijacked a school bus full of kids. He punches a third grader in the face, making them sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Like, he needs to be put down for sure.
Yeah, and I did not remember any of that. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so ultimately, you know, Harry stops him and, like, kills.
Saves the day.
Kills him and then, you know, like, throws his badge
in
the river. And that's when the film ends.
Yeah.
So the idea of Dirty Harry ethics or Dirty Harry corruption is, you know, particularly when the police break the law or violate the law or violate suspects' rights in order to fight crime and ultimately catch the bad guy.
Yes.
So the question is, other than do you feel lucky, punk, is Dirty Harry a vigilante?
Do you want me to answer that now?
No, that seems like actually a good cliffhanger part.
Dun, dun, dun.
Is Dirty Harry a vigilante? So Tommy, dear listener, ponder this question.
Okay.
Be prepared next time
I've
to make your case.
I've got my answer ready. I've got my answer.
Okay. Well, save it for next time.
Okay.
Whether Dirty Harry is a vigilante or not.
Okay.
So here we are. At our cliffhanger. This feels exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, it feels like when Batman and Robin were like tied down to the conveyor belt, like heading towards the buzzsaw.
Yeah, I don't get that reference at all. I don't remember that. I've never seen it.
Like every Batman 66 episode would end on a cliffhanger. They were like tied down in some death trap.
Okay.
Like, you know, on a conveyor belt, like heading towards a buzzsaw. So Will Timey vociferously vocalize that Dirty Harry is not a vigilante.
Gotcha.
Or will your chatty co-host capitulate?
Or singing co-host.
Yeah. Well, we have to keep the alliteration going there, like the V's and the C's. That was a big thing.
Yeah. I got it.
So tune in Monday after next. Same bat time, same bat podcast app. So based on what we talked about today, Tommy, from our episode today, in just a minute, what's yours feeling?
Don't forget that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So maybe good intentions also, in addition to ends justifying the means, are not a great way of determining what is ethical. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still the same idea. Like, you're doing like bad things for a good
reason,
quote unquote. Yeah, for sure.
Just remember. Yeah. Ben, what's your spin?
So my spin is another of Linda Mead's Life Lessons. Hi,
Life
Mom.
Lessons. Hello, Linda.
Yep. So we talked about consequentialist ethics.
Yes.
And, you know, I tell this in my class. This is when I learned the importance of the consequences of your actions.
Yes.
So I've got two younger sisters, Molly and Katie, and we were in the bathroom one night as kids getting ready for bed. And they were, like, brushing their teeth, and I was goofing off, like doing a little tightrope walk on the edge of the bathtub. Yeah. And I lost my balance and I fell.
Oh, imagine that.
And so I like grabbed the shower curtain, just like trying to catch myself. And it actually pulled the shower curtain rod out of the wall.
Yeah.
And the shower curtain rod hit my sister in the back of the head. Like it gave her a big knot. Like it hurt. Like it hurt too.
So anyway, you could have knocked her out.
Yeah, I know. So my mom came in and figured out what's going on, and I got a spanking for that. And I was like, obviously crying. I was like, Mom, why did you spank me? That was an accident. And she said, Ben, she said, before you ever do anything, you need to stop and ask yourself, could you or someone else get hurt as a result of what you're about to do?
Aww.
And if so, don't do that.
That's good. I like that. So that's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lesson about thinking about the consequences of your actions.
Yeah.
So from an ethical standpoint, we absolutely should be concerned about the consequences of our actions. So thanks.
Yes.
Thanks, Mother.
Thanks.
But also, I'm not convinced that utilitarianism is the best way to be concerned about the consequences. So, you know, greater good for the greatest number of people. It sounds nice.
Right.
And we didn't mention this critique earlier, but obviously from a utilitarian perspective, the majority always wins. It's a number game that's referred to as the tyranny of the majority.
Yes.
And also utilitarianism suggests that evil actions can be justified if they produce good consequences.
Right.
And I am personally very hesitant to endorse that kind of thinking.
I do not endorse that.
And we'll look at that more in detail in part two of this episode, particularly looking at the issue of the ends justifying the means when it comes to fighting crime. So, see you next time, everyone.
See ya. We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Library's very own Jenna Polk and Zach Williams. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.